This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everybody. It is Colorado week here in Nebraska. Evan Bland with Tom Chattel. Sam McEwen is going to be joining us through the phone. We're back on Zoom this week. We're going to be back in studio moving forward. But just much like Nebraska, we're all just kind of figuring things out with this new season. We're going to touch on what was a pretty interesting first week in college football. A little bit on Minnesota. I'm going to spend a lot of time on Colorado today. Tom, how are you doing? Are you excited for this Big 8, Big 12 throwback?
Yeah, it turned into a national game. And so we got an email today about they're putting us in a satellite parking lot with a shuttle to get us to the stadium because they ran out of parking. So. Apparently the shuttle goes until midnight. If anybody is still riding at midnight from a 10 a.m. game, well, God love them.
But it's no Purdue golf cart though, right? Like it's probably an actual shuttle, I would think.
They've never done this before, so we will see. But no, I'm anxious to, I'm excited to go. You know, my first trip to Boulder was 1977. I was a sophomore at Mizzou and got in the back of a car with a couple of other riders who were older than me. And they let me crash on their hotel room floor. And we drove 70 all the way from Columbia to Denver. And it was just, it was really magical to see the mountains for the first time. And what a cool stadium. The press box is basically the same. It's not good. But I think this will be my last trip. And I don't know if Nebraska will go back anytime soon. I mean, you know, nobody's talking about this. People want to go back and renew the contract and all that stuff's great. But I think if the Big Ten goes to 10 conference games, those other two, that leaves you with two non-conference games. You already have 10 Power 5 games. You don't need another one. I'd be very shocked if ADs like Trev, I mean, you need to have home games. If you go to 10 conference games, five of those are probably going to be home and five on the road. And well, everybody wants to have seven or eight home games. So I'm going to guess those two non-conference games are going to be teams that are going to come to Lincoln. So, but we'll see. It's probably a long way off. Maybe not, though. I mean, but I'm looking at this as maybe the last time Nebraska goes out there for a while.
Sam, are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Look at that.
Just
yay for me.
Just diving in a little bit to the reality of the week. I know we can talk a little bit about Minnesota if you guys want, but it seems very much a forward-facing week, given how both teams started, what's at stake. What comes to your mind, Sam, when you think of Nebraska, Colorado, just the rivalry?
My childhood. Tom was a professional when I was still in, you know, junior high, and I remember reading his columns about, oh gosh, the 89 game out in Boulder. The 90 game in Lincoln, the 91 snowball game, just being able to read, you know, whether it was Lee or it was Tom who came later, 92, 93, 94, Colorado was in many ways the rival of my adolescence growing up in Nebraska. Oklahoma was the rival of when I was a kid, but, you know, Oklahoma kind of tailed off and Colorado got really good. And so I just remember these battles. For a while, it was option football against option football. Then it became, you know, Colorado. I remember the game when Colorado moved to its new offense. It was in the Blockbuster Bowl against Alabama. And everybody was talking about this new quarterback, Cordell Stewart, who was going to run this offense once he finally became the quarterback. And I remember that really well. And so, you know, just my childhood, the first game I covered in Boulder was later than Tom, of course. It was the 99 game, which was a wild game. Day after Thanksgiving, Nebraska won it in overtime. They led 27-3. And I think going into the fourth quarter, and the game ended up being 30-30 going into overtime or something like that. I think 27-27 going into overtime. Wild game. Nebraska almost blew it. And then they didn't make the national title game, in part because they kind of blew this lead, and Virginia Tech finished undefeated. And there you go. But it's a beautiful stadium. It really is. I like it a lot. It's unique. The fans are not that nice. I remember that, but you know, nothing but good memories. I've always kind of liked Colorado's look too. I've always, you know, I kind of like the gold helmet and the buffalo on it. I've always kind of liked that. I kind of like Ralphie. It's kind of hard not to like Ralphie when you think about it. So this is a fun week. And then when Colorado won that game on Saturday against TCU, it just changed the week. Like, you know, I kind of thought Colorado was going to lose by 3 scores. I think we all did. So, and they didn't. And so then it became like, oh, this is kind of a big game again. And that's what it's felt like all week long.
Mm. Yeah. And it's funny because like we all sort of have different perspectives on the eras with our childhoods and whatnot. And like, for me, it was the 2000s, right? It was the 2001 sort of fall of the empire game. It was, you know, I went to the restore the order game in 2005 when Nebraska was a big underdog and they win 30-3. You know, who can forget, of course, and Ndamukong Suh running over Cody Hawkins back in Memorial Stadium in 2008. And, you know, even if you're quite a bit younger, you'd remember those nail biters in 2018 and 2019. So it's like, it's not Nebraska's best rivalry over the years, but it feels like it has staying power into the modern times, unlike maybe a lot of other opponents of Nebraska's have.
Agreed.
Hmm.
Agreed. Yeah, it's a lot of fun for sure.
Right. So what do you want to get into this week, Sam? Do you want to start with Minnesota a little bit or kind of move forward into what this thing is going to be on Saturday?
If you want to talk about Minnesota, I think the logical place to talk is really the offense and whether or not they can fix that stuff in a week. Defensively, they played fine against Minnesota, but what they're going to face this week on defense is nothing like what they face. So offensively, I'll say this. That was a tough performance to watch. I think we all kind of sat in the press box and we all sort of braced for any time they were throwing the ball inside the 20-yard line. It just you had a bad, queasy feeling about that offense really from start to finish. And they've got a lot to fix in a short amount of time. We're talking to Jeff Sims and Marcus Satterfield today. And to be honest with you, both those guys, you know, need to have better weeks in week 2.
Yeah, no doubt. What did you think, Tom? Just what you saw offensively, what we can expect on Saturday?
Yeah, I came into the game with a different outlook than when I left. And that was, I thought they were going to lose. But by 2 touchdowns in Minnesota, you know, maybe 10 points, 14, right in there. And I thought we would be looking at a 2-touchdown loss and trying to find the positives and trying to move on to Colorado. And I didn't have heartbreak on my the bingo card. I never imagined that it would come down to that. So as the game went on, and it became clear that, hey, they not only can win this game, they probably should. I thought, man, this is better than I thought. And then the way they lost was another bummer. But I came away from that thinking, there's something to like here. There's something going on. They just don't have the talent to overcome mistakes yet. Colorado does. Colorado made mistakes, but one missed tackle in Colorado and boom, it's 7 points. Nebraska doesn't have that. They have to play above their mistakes. And they have to play almost perfect still. And they weren't that at all that way. I'm curious still about how will Satterfield manage Sims, and are they working on him he's got a penchant for telegraphing his passes, and he locks in on a receiver. And can you work on that? I mean, why haven't they worked on that all fall camp? Where are they on that? And so I'm really, you know, I thought, you know, and this is not just Satterfield, it's every offensive coordinator. But early in the fourth quarter last week, they had just started to run the ball on Minnesota. Offensive line got a little momentum, and I felt like they were starting to run a little bit. And he comes out and throws a deep pass to Tommy Hill, and he throws two more passes, and it just kind of kills their whole momentum. I'm thinking, why do these guys do that? When things are going good on the ground,
yes,
why do they always got to show everybody that they can throw the ball? And you know, what is it about that? And so I have a little bit of concern about that this week, because this week calls for lining up and running the ball and just continuing to do it over and over. Because I think they will wear these guys down and they need to hold the ball. But at some point, yeah, we're going to see Air Sims and without a lot of receiving core. And I just wonder, is this the Jeff Sims we're going to see all season? Is that who he is? And he is who he is. And can he improve on that? And, people want to bench him. Well, you know, they're saying, well, if you have accountability, you can't throw three picks and play. Yeah, but at some point, you know, if you play one of the backups and they screw up, well, what are you going to do then? You're going to go back to the guy you benched? It's a little early for that, I think. So that's just kind of the it's a quandary. They're kind of in it right now, but they've got to manage their way to points right now.
The place I start too is like, yeah, it was a loss to Minnesota. It was another one score loss. Like that's the familiar, but it did seem like when you go under the hood a little bit, like they essentially played even with Minnesota in time of possession. They turned them into a pass heavy team in the second half. And, you know, one thing that appears to be pretty sustainable is that they're going to be really deep defensively, or at least they're going to play a lot of players on that side of the ball, 18, 19 guys they had out there. And I think that's going to benefit them at Colorado too. And so the other thing that's fascinating to me is like, if you're analyzing a matchup, you typically lean toward the team that has the more dominant line showing, right? Like offensive line, defensive line. Colorado was gashed against the run. They couldn't get much push offensively in the running game, and Nebraska did pretty well against Minnesota, holding them to 55 rushing yards. You know, the offensive line has room to improve, but I thought they showed a push, especially on some sneaks that they haven't in a while. So that to me, like when you look at the game plan or sort of the approach for Nebraska, I think you go all in on your Big Ten-ness right now, and you just sort of, you grind it out, right? Like this should be a game where Nebraska runs the ball 45 plus times, in my opinion, to shorten this thing and to make Colorado prove that they can stop the run.
Yeah, I like it. It's the meat and potatoes plan for sure. More turf than surf is what I would say. And is Colorado still on the grass field? They do, right? Or did they switch it out? Did they go with the field turf? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska can win this game. I'll say that. I mean, we'll get to the picks at the end here shortly, but I think they can win if they can do those things on offense. I completely agree with Tom. You know, that drive in the second half, they're up 10-3 on Minnesota, your midfield, and you throw three in a row. I understand throwing it to the end zone once, but I get to the 30. Like, take a couple minutes off the clock and then let your quarterback throw it into the end zone instead of trying to make his landmark outside of it. I completely agree. They could have gotten two more first downs, burned 3 or 4 minutes off the clock, and then you're at least in long field goal range. Like, you don't have to punt because you can, you know, you can send Tristan Alvano up there and make a 48 yarder if you miss on three passes in a row. So I completely agree with that. I think they can run the ball against Colorado. I watched this Colorado TCU game again. I mean, this isn't Iowa, and this isn't Iowa State that they're facing. I watched those two games too. They're not facing a great run defense, so you got to be able to run the ball, and this will be a test for Nebraska's offensive line. It'll be a test for their running backs. It'll be a test for Jeff Sims. Everybody's got to toughen up and pack a lunch and do all the rest. And then you got to throw the ball when you need to throw the ball. But make you throw the ball. Don't, you know, try to have unforced errors. On the other side of the ball, I mean, watching those Colorado skill players is like watching Colorado skill players back in the 90s. They were great. There's a lot of, we'll debate Deion versus Rule here, I guess, in a second, but you're really never going to go wrong taking a bunch of receivers and running backs in the transfer portal who then come and produce. And that's what they did. I mean, those are good players, and they played really well against TCU.
You know, I thought that back in the day that Colorado players got almost too hyped for the game. And, you know, McCartney's, you know, we hate him, we hate Red. It's just so intense and so personal. I felt like sometimes they just got a little too much, whereas, you know, Nebraska was fired up to play them, and they were pissed. You know, Nebraska came out and played differently against Colorado. Well, they never admitted it, but they sure as hell did. And I think gave them an edge that going into the 90s that they didn't really have. But I think, you know, I'd be interested to see the approach. You know, Deion Sanders doesn't hate Nebraska. He doesn't even know Nebraska. He's playing to the crowd. He's trying to get, and I think it's a good idea. I think it helps you with all this national media attention they're getting. It helps give them a little focus back on the game rather than on themselves and how great they are. The Sanders kids, the quarterback, he looks really composed, and you could rattle Cordell Stewart. Nebraska did. He played nervous, happy feet with, you know, Charlie McBride coming after him. And a lot of times, like that 94 game, they took Rashawn Salaam out of every play, and they dared Cordell to beat him, and he couldn't do it. And it was a great strategy. I don't necessarily want them to go out try that again this week, but you know, I'm anxious to see home game, all the hype, all the emotions and the adrenaline. How's Colorado going to play? And a little easier when you're the underdog on the road, and Deion saying everybody hates us. Well, everybody loves you right now. So I'm anxious to see how that works out.
Well, Nebraska said all week, and Matt Rhule said all week, it's about just football. They're not focused, or they're going to try not to focus on all the ancillary stuff, but we can. And as you alluded to, Sam, just the whole Deion Sanders versus Matt Rhule thing, in some ways, these are two coaches that are – they're just going to be linked together because they were hires in the same coaching cycle this last offseason. And man, have they gone about building their programs differently, right? I mean, Matt Rhule has a history of sort of a slow burn, a slow build and Deion Sanders, one game, he beats a ranked team. What do you guys make of just the comparing and the contrasting of how through 1 week those programs look? And is there a right or a wrong way to build things in the portal era?
No, absolutely not. Both sides are doing it the right way for them. Colorado wanted the quick, you know, the quick shot of relevance. And, you know, you could, I don't know how long Deion's going to stay. I'm not that smart, but, you know, if he leaves, he's going to have chances to leave after this year and every year after last week. So if he leaves, I mean, whenever he does leave, and I'm not saying he will, but whenever he does leave, that most of that roster is going to go with him. So, you know, and then you are starting over with the next coach. I think Nebraska needs a program in the Big Ten that is going to be there every year and do the same things the same way. And it's just different approaches, and they're both right. And, you know, people, I know how some Husker fans are going to get nervous if they lose and wonder and all this stuff. And it's all part of being a fan. But this is a 3-year thing, man. This is a 2 or 3 year thing. And it's, to be honest, I had them when I picked 6-6, I had them losing the first two games. I didn't know what Colorado was going to be. But I thought, well, I just don't see how Nebraska's going to score. I just don't know. And, you know, you're on the road. I don't know. I took a flyer. I said, I think they'll lose the first two. Mm. But I think they've got plenty of opportunity to find an identity and playmakers, or, you know, get some guys coached up on offense and so on and so forth. Plenty of time to rally. So, but anyway, no, there's no wrong approach here. But again, I would caution. All these national guys are going to start writing, well, this is the new wave and everybody can do this. And I disagree with that. I think Deion can do it because he's Deion. The idea of taking this many transfer guys is nuts, but he's got a way of getting people to rally around him and his message. He's different. And because he is different, he can do that. Now we'll see if he can keep doing it, but certainly they've come out of the gate really strong. I don't know that any coach can just decide I'm going to do what he did and have the same result. And of course we don't know what those results are yet either, but it'd be fascinating to watch. And I think Rhule was fine. I thought he was a little tight this week at his press conference.
I agree.
So he's human. It's a big game. If you weren't nervous or tight, I'd be worried. But I don't know. I think it's going to be, like I said, this is a marathon, and it's so important for Nebraska to do this right and not worry about Minnesota or Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Tom said. I mean, at the end of the day, they're two different guys. They're going to do it their own way. I think the thing that I appreciate about what Deion Sanders did do is he went out and got some really good players. I mean, how many did they add, Evan? 68? Well, how many was it?
Scholarship, yeah. More than 80 overall.
So, obviously, some of those guys are down-the-line guys that they plan to build around later on. But I'd say about 15 of those scholarship players are pretty damn good. And they're all playing skill positions for CU. I mean, Hunter is great, and Shadur Sanders is good. And those two receivers from South Florida, Demi Horn and Xavier Weaver, they would be the number two and number three receivers for Nebraska. They're good players. And so if you can add really good players on the front end, you can do something. And I think one of the other things that you can say about his approach is it was kind of like a startup. So, you know, it wasn't like, hey, there's 20 guys here and these are my guys, but there's like 80 other guys over here. It was like, you're all my guys and any guy that's stuck around is like one of the few people that I actually want to work with and who wants to work with me. And so I'm guessing there was quite a bit of buy-in off the top. Like a lot of times what happens is, you know, a coach inherits 80 guys and they maybe, you know, maybe they run off 15, but it's still 65 guys scholarship wise that are, you know, guys you inherit. In Deion's case, he basically remade the entire roster. So they're all Deion's guys. And there's some advantage to that. I don't know that you can do it again. So if Deion thinks he's going to add 35 transfer players this offseason, I think he's mistaken. We'll see how it goes. I would say that the thing that I would appreciate about Rhule, and I'm just saying this analytically, not like emotionally, is I think Rhule's approach is better, is more sustainable. I think Deion Sanders can get this team really high, but if they lose a couple of games, and I do think they're going to lose games this year, they look kind of like a 7-5 team to me, as does TCU. It could be hard because I don't know that Deion's rarely failed in his life. Like he's never really failed as a player. He was the best player on the field almost every time he took the field, unless he was covering Jerry Rice. He won a World Series, didn't he? I think he did. He did. He was a great baseball player. He was a great track runner. And coaching, he kind of took jobs where he could have a ton of success because he had better football players. Now he's at a school where even if he has great players, he's never going to be, you know, having the players that he has will not be so much better than the players that Oklahoma State has that he's just going to roll out there and win by 50. And so he's going to have to deal with that challenge. And I think that'll be the area where it's tough. I think Matt Rhule has a lot of experience building a program. And then the question for Rhule will be, once he builds it, will he sustain it? Because what we've seen so far, he doesn't really necessarily stick around to see what happens. I do think he's committed to doing that at Nebraska, but we'll see what occurs. So they both have their own approaches, and I think they're both good. And I do wonder a little bit about what happens when Colorado loses. For example, if Colorado loses on Saturday, how does Deion Sanders and his team handle defeat? You know, like, we don't know yet because they haven't lost yet.
Mm. Absolutely right. Unfortunately, I do have to jet, so I will leave you to it. Looking forward to Saturday, though. Do you want my prediction?
I do.
Okay. I think Nebraska pulls out a close one. I think they end the streak, the 21-game losing skid to a top 25 team. I think it's you know, 31-28 sort of game, maybe. I think the defense gets some stops. And the offense maybe looks a little bit better against, you know, a non-Minnesota defense like Colorado. So that's, I'm calling it. I usually don't pick Nebraska in these, as we know. Like, I kind of feel like they need to show it. But it feels to me like the path to victory is so obvious this time, or at least what they should try to do to get there, that I think they can find a way. So there you have it.
Okay. I'll get the rest of your picks later. I'll go, by the way, you're 8-2. And Tom's 8-2. Tom got Florida State. Ooh. We picked LSU.
Yeah.
So Tom's 8-2. You're 8-2. And I'm 7-3 because I was the dummy who picked Boise. Who got their ass kicked. That's me being dumb. But we'll go through the rest of the picks here. All right. Evan's got to go to baseball, folks. He's not just leaving us at the altar because he's got like something else other than that. He's got Husker baseball, Will Bolt. Filling people in on God knows what. I don't know. I hope nobody's hurt.
Gonna have a fun Deion Sanders related story with Nebraska here later this week too. So looking forward to that.
You will. That's right. You do. You will, and that'll be a lot of fun for people to watch. Thank you, Evan.
See you guys.
I think the planning of the Pick Six podcast this week was about as successful as Nebraska's red zone operation. So we had to move things around a little bit. I've had a couple of meetings this morning and Tom's gracious to be here. Now we've got Jeff Sims and Marcus Satterfield letter. Anything else from that NUCU game that you want to cover, Tom, before we go to picks?
Not really. I just, you know, I just felt like the one play, right? You make one play. I just think this team right now needs confidence, and it's just, it's kind of mind boggling to me that, you know, the schedule's been that way for a while, but, you know, this program needs confidence. And when you're building a program, you want to start strong, and you want to get reinforcement behind the message, and have to go on the road to Minnesota and then Colorado. Okay, tough game. No, it's not a tough game. It's the national game of the week.
I know.
I had somebody tell me it's who's going to get better ratings, Colorado, Nebraska, or Alabama, Texas? And I think the thought is it'll be Colorado, Nebraska, but it won't be close. So everybody's watching this game, and so all of a sudden you're walking right into the fire pit of
that's right.
You don't get to hash things out behind the scenes, you know, down the back alley, in behind curtains. You know, nobody gets watching you. You know, you're playing Toledo or whatever. No, you're playing in the national stage, and that's a hard. It's kind of a hard task. What they've had to do, and I forget the feeling that if they lose Saturday, Nebraska fans will be upset, and of course Colorado does that to you, and yeah. Wondering about Rule and this and that. I'm going, man, we should have had two home games to start the season. Get everybody feeling good, then go on the road. But it is what it is, and I thought that they really came close to having. Imagine if they had won that game, just an unbelievable start, and. Imagine if they won and Colorado did what they did. This would be two teams, 1-0, and oh, what fun it is to, you know, compare the two new coaches and their styles. But if they can correct, they get Sims to play smart football, throw that ball out of bounds, throw it into the stands, and you get that field goal. Well, how about this? Why throw a pass on that third down? Why not? Of course, you had no timeouts. You couldn't run, but just kick it. I don't know. I just feel like we need everybody to be a little bit smarter, a little bit manage it better. So make sure the right running back's in there, not going to fumble. I don't think we're there yet where we're going to start benching people, but I think that will come down the road. Again, he's going to manage a team that doesn't have a lot of confidence and doesn't have a lot of playmakers. So, but that defense sure looked good. And the defensive curveball, the off-speed pitch of not knowing what they're going to do is going to have to carry the day for a while. And, you know, I thought special teams was solid. Keep that going. And just try to figure something out on offense. But again, I didn't think we'd be sitting here looking at the game of the year where everybody's coming to the game and where we can't park and the press box will be sitting on top of each other. And who knew?
Who knew? Football is about blocking and tackling. If Nebraska blocks really well and they tackle really well, I think they'll win. But everything you said was great. Totally agree. Let's go to the picks. All right. You're 8-2. Evan's 8-2. I'm 7-3. Well, I'll get Evan's later, and he's always good about that. He won't check with us. All right. Mississippi against Tulane.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. I'll go Green Wave.
I'll take Ole Miss. Okay. Iowa State. If Kirk Ferentz wins, it's his 200th career win.
Yeah, and who better to do it against than those guys? But like Iowa State in this one, a little bit of swag coming out of the you know, I know it's you and I, but a little bit of swag, and didn't feel like Iowa had a great opener. They won, but I didn't feel like it was a feel good deal. So I'll go Cyclones.
Okay, so I have Iowa.
Okay,
beating Iowa State. Kirk Ferentz getting his 200th win. I have that one as a 17-13. That's because the line is the over under is 35.
Okay.
Wisconsin at Washington State. Washington State won this game last year. Wisconsin has a new coach.
Yeah, I'll go Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin, on. I think that's how it goes. I'm going to go Washington State.
Okay.
Illinois KU, Friday night. Yeah. We got to watch this somewhere, ESPN2.
Yeah, my daughter will be there, her first KU football game, and Friday night on the Hill. Great game, two good, very good coaches. I'm going to go KU. I know Illinois is good. Thought they kind of had their hands full last week. I like KU.
So do I. I think KU is gonna drop 35, and I don't think Illinois can keep up. Lovie Smith's recruits are no longer there, and Lovie Smith was a good recruiter. And Brett Bielema is not playing with those guys anymore. Okay, Oklahoma State, Arizona State.
Yeah, a future Big 12 preview. Gundy's done well in Phoenix, so go with them. I think Oklahoma State's just better anyway. So OSU.
We only get about two Oklahoma State games a year in the pick section. Yeah. And this is a rough week. This is not what I wanted to do. I thought about going with eight games instead of, but we're going here. They'll win that game. Okay, this is brutal too. Auburn, Cal. Good God. Cal. What the hell is Auburn doing playing at Cal?
Yeah, it's a weird game. Kind of remind me of the time Nebraska played there, and all the Nebraskans walking down the mall to the game past the incense huts. This will be kind of the same deal. Auburn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Auburn all the way. That was the game where Frank Solich, he kicked a late field goal and it pissed off the Cal fans or something.
Yeah, that was a cool stadium. They had a cannon on the hill. And I always laugh that, you know, they were, I guess pacifist school, and they had that big cannon they shot off. But,
They played some interesting road games in the 90s. Yep. UCLA, Arizona State, Cal, Washington.
Got them ready for the Big Ten. You know, they didn't know.
Texas Tech. They played at Texas Tech. Oh, Texas A&M and Miami. I'm taking A&M.
Jimbo Bobby Petrino weird marriage worked last week. I'll go with it again. A&M.
It's a good team. They're gonna be good this year. Notre Dame, North Carolina State.
Get your Irish up. Big win early. NC State solid. I like Notre Dame.
Me too. Texas, Alabama.
You know, I not that I don't believe in Nick Saban. I thought he's got a weird feeling that Texas is really good. And I'm going to go with Horns.
Oh, okay. Now it's getting interesting. I'll take Bama. I'm afraid to pick against them.
I know.
I guess we'll see. And the last one, Nebraska, Colorado. I have Nebraska like Evan.
Yeah, this is one of those games where everybody's counting out Nebraska, and it's just the kind of game they'll probably go in and win. But until I need to see more out of Jeff Sims. And they're going to have to complete some passes to win this game at some point. And they're going to have, when they get in the red zone, they're going to have to score. And I worry, even though Nebraska tackled really well last week and they swarmed and they're hitting hard. And I think that they can wear Colorado down up front, both sides. One missed tackle this bunch is 7 points. And so I'm going to go Buffs. Of course, I want Nebraska to win. But I just think these kind of games, playmakers make plays and win games, and they got more of them.
I will take Nebraska. 35-32 field goal at the gun. I don't know why. I feel like Nebraska is going to run the football. I think they will tackle well enough. I don't think Colorado's defense is very good, and I think Nebraska will respond well. Everything that you said makes sense. I think that is a logical conclusion. I just have a hunch that Colorado's defense will struggle after a week of playing TCU. I think they're going to be tired. I think they're going to be beat up. And I think they're going to struggle in their first game home. I think the emotions will get to them. And I think Nebraska wins 35-32.
Well, this is the kind of game matchup we saw a lot of way back when. Too many times Colorado was the hot team in the nation. They played like Miami and Florida State. They threw the ball. Nebraska was the antiquated dinosaur. But they had a knack of going to Boulder and winning. And they won a lot there. And you might be right. We'll see.
From the auxiliary parking lot to a packed press box, we will be there on Saturday. I don't know what to expect. I do think it's going to be fun. This is kind of why we do this. For games like this, this is, right?
Yeah, and I might have mentioned this before you got in, but I'll say it again. My first trip out here was 1977, the sophomore at Mizzou on the Maneater staff, and I climbed into the back of a car, 2 a.m. with two other sports writers who were with the Missourian, and we drove straight shot Columbia to Denver. And watching the mountains, you know, get there in the morning and watching those things, and I'll never forget that trip. It was magic to do that. And of course, back then I was sleeping on the hotel room floor or whoever I could go, and it was just very cool. And I think this is probably my last trip out there. I don't know the schedule. I'm not, you know, going forward. But I have a hard time believing, Sam, with 10 conference games, I think the Big Ten is going to go to 10. That means you have two non-conference. And I'm assuming with 5 or 10 conference games, you go 5 home, 5 away probably. You know, ADs need 7 or 8 home games. And I just feel like going forward, if it's 10 conference games, the two non-conference are not going to be Power Fives. You know, USC is going to have a decision to make with Notre Dame. I mean, they want to play Notre Dame and 10 Big Ten teams. I mean, that's crazy. I think going forward that the two non-cons are going to be teams that are coming to Lincoln. And so I'm anxious to see what the Big Ten does with that, what Fox wants. Maybe Fox wants keep it at 9. They have that non-conference game you can put on Fox. But this series is fine. It's good, but you know, give me Nebraska, Missouri. Give me Nebraska, KU, or K State. You know, let's go back into the Big Eight and can mix it up a little bit. So, but in any case, I'm treating this all like this is my last trip out there. So, Eddie's Mexican Canteen is gone. But the old dark horse sitting on at the end of 36 as you go into, I think it's called Baseline or Foothills Drive, the main rag, you wind around Still there, old dark horse. And so I'll try to drive by some places and, you know, reminisce a little bit, but it'll be fun.
It will be. That's right. Yep. This is probably, yeah, goodbye to Boulder. And that's, I don't know. We didn't really get to say goodbye to the other places, and hopefully at some point, yeah, Nebraska gets back to those places.
Well, and we'll see, but I just don't know going forward, the scheduling, especially if you're trying to make a playoff, you're trying to get one of those four or five bids in the Big Ten. Scheduling will be everything, and it won't be. It'll be hard for the old Cowboys like me that like these matchups. But you know, all of a sudden, Washington and Oregon, all of a sudden, non-conference games are in my conference. So why not?
And with that, we go into the rest of Colorado Week. It's going to be fun. I look forward to it. We're going to have fun coverage out there. We'll be out there in the morning. We'll be eating breakfast, I guess, at the stadium. But I've enjoyed talking about this stuff this week. I've enjoyed hearing the story.
It is fun. And I'm glad Jeff Sims is talking today. I really think that the quarterback ought to talk every week. So, you know, facing us isn't anything like facing these teams on Saturday. So we're a bunch of pussycats, but we do have questions. So anyway, we'll see you in Boulder.
See you in Boulder. That's our Pick Six podcast for this week. We'll be back next week to recap this awesome game and look forward to the first home game. Thanks, Husker fans.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.